across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, not exactly our Lake Wissota studio. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06, and we have made it to Friday, February 9th, 2024. And it's another beautiful day to have you here in Madison, where I am for one more day. But what do we always say? When you're here, you're up north, and we just have the we've got that vibe going all the way through. Vibe appears to be the word of the year. Wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the Civic Media app, social media, by podcast, thank you so much for taking us along on your day. I've got some questions for you, and the first one I'm going to start with is, should the day after the Super Bowl be a national holiday? And if you feel like it should or should not for some reason, you can be part of the discussion at 844-967-2789. I mean, everybody watches it. You start early, you party till late, you probably drink a little more than you normally would on a Sunday with work the next day. Everybody kind of drags. Should there be a holiday around this, perhaps? Well, there's a reason why it's scheduled the way that it is, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Here's what else we have coming up this morning. A partisan hit piece disguised as a special counsel report exonerates President Biden for his handling of classified documents, but gets more attention for its efforts at armchair psychiatry. Also, former President Trump has dealt one loss and quite likely one win in two of his many court cases. In our second hour, we will be joined live by Civic Media's Mike Clemens, who's in Las Vegas for Super Bowl 58. He'll tell us the latest as Kansas City and San Francisco prepare for Sunday's big game, which is third in line for the national attention span right after commercials and Taylor Swift. We will talk to Mark Jacob. We'll talk to meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And we'll talk to Greg Bach, who's in Waukesha right now, because of what we're going to talk to Brittany Merlot about. Greg, good morning. There Hi. Was a tornado in Wisconsin in February.
Welcome to the end times. Welcome to the end times. Locusts and the floods are coming next, and there's nothing you can do about it. Hey, kids.
Kids, welcome. Now, on the brighter side, there's still good in the world, because you'll notice I have a mic stand today, because I'd forgotten mine at home when I came down to Madison. And for some reason yesterday, at a radio station, we couldn't find a mic stand. I walk in at 5 o'clock this morning, and there's the mic stand, and here's the note that was on there as well. And it reads, I'm sitting at Todd Alba's desk, and it is handwriting. It says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, may my rod and my staff and my mic stand comfort thee. Break a leg, Todd." So thank you, Todd, for the gift of the mic stand.
Wow. Way to take a stand, Todd. Way to take a stand.
Take a stand. Take a stand. He gave a stand. Yeah. Thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate that.
Also, I contend that the Super Bowl is the fourth thing. It's important.
Oh, what else?
Taylor, commercials, Puppy Bowl.
Oh, Puppy Bowl. Yes, yes. And for another set of the population, although they're probably in the Taylor set, you know, the halftime show, whoever it is, which this year is Usher. Usher. So, some folks will watch the game. Other people have said, you know, so I'm not the first to say that had Baltimore made it in, or especially if Detroit had made it in, probably more people would pay attention. Yeah. You know, get absolutely. That underdog thing. It's like, it's Kansas City again, you know, it's San Francisco. Okay. So they'll play a game, but that's really just the foundation, and everything else is what people are going to be watching. Puppy Bowl included. Will you have Maybell watching the Puppy Bowl?
Oh God. Yeah. I want to see her freak out. Like, what are all those weird looking versions of me doing?
Nice. I like it. So we'll expect a good report on that one as well. So yeah, here we go. Super Bowl. We'll talk to Mike Clemens, find out more about that coming up in just a little bit. As for getting back to the tornado for a second here. So yeah, first ever spotted Thursday just south of Madison, confirmed by the National Weather Service. First in February since records have been kept. Rock County officials received reports of about 25 buildings or other structures damaged, power lines down, no immediate reports of injuries. Brittany Merlot put this up yesterday. Tornado warnings went out into Green, Rock, and Jefferson counties as rare winter warmth was hit by a cold front, firing off severe weather. Storm spotters confirmed a rope tornado on the ground near Albany, headed toward Evansville about 5:30 last night. In other areas, Marshfield clocked a wind gust at 54 miles an hour. Whitman Field in Oshkosh got to 48. I was actually at the on the top floor, the 10th floor of the AC Hotel in Madison, the one that overlooks the Capitol Dome.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been to Enovino, that restaurant on top. We were at a in a meeting room there with a bunch of other Up North News and Courier Newsroom folks. And when we got done, which was about 5 o'clock, and you could see, of course, up on the 10th floor there, you could see the storm front kind of coming in. And the rest of the crew took off for the Edgewater Hotel, the I forget the name of the restaurant there, but to the State House for a little team dinner. And I said, well, you guys go ahead. I'm going to talk to Kia Vakil for our usual Friday morning thing because he's out in L.A. And so I know they got rained on quite a bit on the way out there. But I was a little bit more worried about me as I'm watching all this lightning. The lightning was insane.
Yeah.
And when I heard about the tornado afterwards, I was like, yeah, maybe on the 10th floor with floor-to-ceiling windows all around me, maybe wasn't my best move. But, you know, these are the things I do for the show.
Coming this summer, Twister 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Oh, yeah, Twister 2. Is Helen Hunt going to be in the room with me? Because then I'm in. But otherwise, no, not so much. I was going to go on a tangent about the movie Twister, but it'll be here soon enough playing on a loop as it does on cable TV, you know, come springtime.
I saw the movie in the theater and I thought that the roof was going to get ripped off of the building because it was that good a sound. Mm-hmm. And then you see it on TV for the first time. You're like, adorable.
Right. So getting that question, should the day after the Super Bowl be a holiday? Greg, where do you come down on that? There you go.
Absolutely not. No.
Yep.
Absolutely not. And here, that's the most American demand I've ever heard in my life.
Yes. Yes. And yes, the Super Bowl used to be a January thing. I remember thinking it was just like sacrilegious when it first became like February 1st or 3rd or something like that. And it's just continued to slide down to the point where people are like, well, there should be a holiday here. Well, there is a holiday. And so people have suggested, why doesn't the NFL move it to the next weekend where some people still get Washington's birthday off or President's Day?
Right? Yeah.
And the answer for folks that hadn't followed this before is the NFL knows if they were to move the Super Bowl to an actual holiday weekend, they would actually lose viewers because what do some people do on holiday weekends? They travel. They take advantage of the 3-day weekend.
I was going to say, Rob Banks, you're probably right. Vacation. They buy mattresses.
Yeah. They already know they've got you. Yeah. They know they have the power to make an entire country stay up past bedtime, drink a little more heavily on the day before a new work week, and nobody's going to stop them. We always hear about the pending death of the NFL, yeah, and there are real concerns about football and things like that, but not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. It's here.
I feel like all the NFL had to do to weather those quote unquote problems they had with, well, I'm not going to get into that. It's just put their head down, listen to almost no one, and keep going.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of management 101.
Yeah.
In so many places. By
not our problem. Not our problem.
Yep. You may address any future questions to this brick wall. The Up North News Daily newsletter's out, Greg, and it's all about National Pizza Day. Oh, here we are. I know our long national nightmare is over.
A
national
newsletter after my heart.
There are several articles in there about great places to get pizza. Wisconsin's recognition for pizza, mm-hmm, of course, because of the cheese, one of the best New York City pizzas, got bested by a Wisconsin choice. Again, I think it's because of our cheese, but all kinds of good good stories in there. Yeah. So celebrate National Pizza Day. We'll talk more about that and the other national days on the calendar here coming up a little bit later on this hour. And also in the newsletter, we have a note about the designer behind those really cool jersey jackets that you've seen on Taylor Swift and on Simone Biles. She scored a big deal with the NFL to license her apparel. And so it's no longer just a custom made thing. Folks all over will be able to get what she is making there. So look for that in our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com and find out more there. We're going to get to sports now at 6:16 because there's a lot to tell you about what's coming up this weekend. But we'll start with last night and the Milwaukee Bucks. They are officially in a slump. They are now 1-5 under Doc Rivers. The Minnesota Timberwolves spoiled the home debut of the new Bucks coach, whose number 31 Marquette jersey, by the way, hangs from the rafters at Fiserv Forum. The Timberwolves beat the Bucks 129-105. Now, there was some reason behind last night's loss. Damian Lillard missed a second straight game. Chris Middleton was also out because of their sprained ankles. And Brooke Lopez did return, but after missing three games as his wife gave birth to their child. Before the game, the Bucks sent Cam Payne and a second-round pick to the Philadelphia 76ers for Patrick Beverley. But with Payne traded and Lillard injured, the Bucks had no point guards last night. So Giannis was pulled even before the fourth quarter to give him some time off because the Bucks turn around and they play again tonight. They host the Charlotte Hornets at Fiserv Forum, and you can catch that game on locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, Oshkosh Air Support, News from the Center and Richland Center, Lake Air and Amory, WRJN Racine, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. The 11th-ranked Badger men's basketball team will take their three-game losing streak to New Jersey tomorrow morning to play Rutgers. That is an 11 a.m. game. You can hear that game on several stations across the Civic Media Radio Network and through the Civic Media app. If you haven't downloaded that yet, what you doing? Go get that downloaded, and you can follow all the shows here on Civic Media and Badger basketball as well. The 7th-ranked Marquette men's basketball team has a 6-game win streak going, and they will take that into a home game at Fiserv against St. John's tomorrow night. Badger women's basketball hosts Penn State Sunday afternoon. Marquette women's basketball is at Providence on Saturday afternoon. Tell you about the hockey teams and get into unpacking the news in just a bit. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday, when you're here, you're up north live on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As we sat on the front porch of that old gray house where I was born and raised.
This would be Travis Tritt, who turns 61 years old today. We'll have more birthdays and notes in our history lesson coming up about a half hour from now. Forgot to tell you about temperatures around Wisconsin. Several of them missing. Looks like the National Weather Service has a little tech issue here, but what we do have is that it's 36 in Chippewa Falls, Hayward 32. Green Bay is at 42, La Crosse 40 degrees right now, Wisconsin Rapids 39, Oshkosh 41, and Madison 38 degrees. Waukesha, Greg, is one of those places that did not report a temperature, so I'm going to need you now to tell us in your most meteorological accurate terms what it's like in Waukesha. Right.
Well,
now.
Thanks, Pat. I appreciate you throwing it to me. Right now, Waukesha is enjoying 40-degree weather with cool winds coming out of the south, and chance of rain later today. I don't know if any of that's real. Don't tell Brittany I said this. I don't want to get in trouble with anyone.
Very good. Thank you, Greg Bach. The Badger men's hockey team, ranked 4th in the nation, hosts Notre Dame tonight and tomorrow night. And the Badger women's hockey team, ranked 2nd in the country, has an 11-game win streak with 6 to go, including 2 this weekend up at Bemidji State in northern Minnesota. And I want to let you know, in Division 3, the UW River Falls women's hockey team is now 24-0, ranked number 1 in the country with 1 game to go, and that is tomorrow at UW Eau Claire, which is 6th ranked in the country. So should be a very good match as the River Falls women go for a perfect season. All right, let's unpack some of the news here at 6:22, and let's start with, we're going to talk to Kia Vakil a bit more coming up in just a couple of minutes about the U.S. Supreme Court discussing Donald Trump and his eligibility for the ballot. So we'll pick that up in just a little bit. But I did want to touch on something that then came up last evening, and it deals with essentially the bad faith or the disingenuousness or just the utter lack of any honor by some people who have become part of the right-wing movement in America. And here are some examples before we get to the most recent one last evening. Whether we're talking about William Barr whitewashing the Mueller report before anyone else could read it and therefore prejudicing how a clear-eyed interpretation would show the many ways Russia worked to help the Trump campaign, or Trump-appointed Judge Eileen Cannon working so hard to defend Trump that she, a judge, is seeking to publicly identify certain witnesses and make public certain documents that could compromise national security, or yesterday's psychiatric hit job disguised as a special counsel report by Republican appointee Robert Hur that exonerated President Biden on the subject of handling classified documents. We are living in an age where the public trust means nothing any longer by some people entrusted to positions that require independence. But what we get is partisan fealty and continued proof that there is a certain subset of America's political class that would allow a cult of personality to literally trump their responsibility to defend American democracy. That's where we stand right now with something like this special counsel's, you know, quote unquote report that again made clear that President Biden did nothing that would warrant any further legal action. And that's what a special counsel is supposed to do. As somebody else put it very succinctly, their job is to put up or shut up. You either have a case or you don't. You don't share all of your personal feelings rooted in quite clearly a partisan bias one way or another. I mean, if you want to do that separately, you can, but your job is essentially to call the balls and strikes. Isn't that what we hear John Roberts saying all the time? John Roberts, you know, the guy who talks about calling balls and strikes, the guy who talked about states' rights when it comes to the Voting Rights Act, but apparently not so much when states decide who's on the ballot. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself, and Kia Vakil is going to cover that for us in a couple of minutes. But there is just a certain contradiction, shall we say, in folks in how they see their duties when they are supposed to be impartial and independent. In Congress yesterday, there was continued discussion of how they move forward after Republicans defeated the bipartisan border security proposal that they themselves had demanded. And during a floor debate on stripping away all the border concerns and just coming back to where we were originally with this, and that was aid to Ukraine and to Israel and to China, or to Taiwan, rather. You had good old Lindsey Graham standing up there on the floor of the Senate yesterday and speaking out against the bipartisan border deal. At that point, one of the authors of the bipartisan border deal, Kyrsten Sinema, senator from Arizona, stood up and said, in so many words, how did you vote on that border deal that you said you wanted to have? Well, Lindsey Graham did not like being poked, and so language alert coming up here, but he said in response to Kyrsten Sinema on the floor of the Senate, you know, that the deal was, in his word, half-assed, and, you know, that it was put together without enough input. Shortly after that, on Twitter, up comes Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, one of the other co-authors of the deal, who let the world know Lindsey Graham's staffer was right there in the room when they were drawing up this bill. And so Lindsey Graham had plenty of opportunity to have input on the border bill. And he, like many Republicans, probably would have voted for it if Donald Trump hadn't come along and, you know, kneecapped his own Republican Party by demanding they now kill this bill that they wanted so badly. And so now guys like Lindsey Graham absolutely end up with egg on their face and only make it worse when they continue to speak about it in this way. They basically should take the loss or tell Trump to go pound sand and, you know, work on a bipartisan border bill, you know, together again. Let's look at from a state news update. I'm already giggling about this one. A Republican member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission who has faced calls to resign for being a fake elector after falsely declaring that former President Trump had won Wisconsin claimed during an Elections Commission meeting on Thursday that he's done more for Black people than any other white Republican. Bob Spindell, who is white, made the remark after two members of the public called for him to resign during a commission meeting on Thursday. There has been a push for Spindell to resign or for Senate Republican Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu to rescind his appointment ever since Spindell bragged after the 2022 midterm election about local Republican efforts to depress voter turnout among Black and Hispanic voters in the Milwaukee area. But Spindell, of course, having no shame and wouldn't step down after being exposed as a fake elector and having to, you know, rescind his claims. Why would he resign in light of those comments? Nope. Instead, his response was, quote, "There is no white Republican that has done more for the Black community than me. So I suggest you go back and take a look at my past record," Spindell said, marking Black History Month in a way that only Bob Spindell can. We'll get some of the Midwest Farm Report from Pam Yonke coming up, and then we'll meet with Kia Vakil for more about this week's headlines. All across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, when you're here, you're up north. We are back on this Friday morning with Courier Newsroom National Correspondent Kia Vakil. Kia, how are you?
I am well, Pat. How are you?
I'm well. If we're talking about things that made national news this week, I mean, what a 1-2 punch of news surrounding the former president. One, really bad news when it came to his claims of absolute immunity, and one that a lot of people are interpreting as really good news in terms of how the Supreme Court justices took those arguments about bumping the former president off the Colorado ballot. Let's start there first and give us your overview of how the arguments went.
Yeah, so most of the justices on the court, including the a couple of the liberals, seemed reluctant to allow Colorado to disqualify Trump from the ballot. Part of that logic is that, it could set a bad precedent by letting a single state disqualify a presidential candidate. It seems, and this is not a surprise, it was always unlikely that the Supreme Court would uphold this effort from Colorado. And that's not just because it's, a conservative stacked court, which it is. We saw some of the justices, really express doubts and said it would, set a sort of extraordinary power for individual states to affect national elections. And so it feels incredibly likely that the court will allow Trump to stay on the ballot. We will obviously have an election with him on the ballot in November.
I will say not for the first time, not for the last time. It sure seems like all the folks who love to talk about states' rights all of a sudden have changed their tune.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we see that in, whatever you think about the merits of this case, states' rights is a sort of strategic phrase that the right loves to use when it benefits them, and they completely discard it when they want to like run roughshod over actual, states when they're in power. So it's just a total hypocritical phrase and justification. The handful of people who may genuinely believe in that are far outnumbered by the people who are cynical political actors.
And by the way, there's this other argument. And again, you understand it in light of today's political environment that, oh, this just means some red states will try to ban, you know, Joe Biden from the ballot. And yeah, that makes sense now when you consider the time we live in, you know, that Republicans, Trump Republicans would actually do that, something that was completely unheard of beforehand. You wouldn't have this talk of a former president being booted from the ballot as an insurrectionist if he hadn't been an insurrectionist and the kind of person who would try to bump his own political opponent off the ballot. So I honestly don't know what our founding fathers would say about those arguments today.
Yeah, it's hard to know. And, you know, it's tricky because I'm both, you know, it's pretty clear that he did engage, to me at least, in an insurrection and incite one. But at the same time, I understand the, you know, the justices. I don't know that I fully agree with it, but I very much understand where they're coming from because, you know, it's almost certain that then Republican states would bump Biden. And then, you know, what will, you know, what is, where are we even at that point? And so, you know, this just feels like a flaw in the system that there's no real remedy for. And, you know, our system is not perfect by any means. And, you know, it was not built to withstand an entire party becoming beholden to a craven, you know, narcissistic lunatic. So
who would launch an insurrection? Yes,
exactly.
So it is, as has been said about Trump so many times, unprecedented, along with a claim of absolute immunity. Maybe not totally unprecedented. We recall Richard Nixon saying that, you know, well, when the president does it, then it's not a crime. But he never actually had to go try to prove that in court. Trump did try to prove that in court, and it does not appear to have gone very well. I think properly label the Court of Appeals ruling a smackdown.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Federal appeals panel ruled this week that Trump can face trial for his the charges he faces and for trying to overturn the 2020 election, you know, very strongly rejecting his argument that, you know, he has total immunity for anything he might have done as president, because apparently, you know, his justification is, you know, any action taken as president, you know, means you're immune from criminal prosecution. The appeals court really did not buy into that argument whatsoever. We know the judge also has not bought into that argument. You know, she said in December that, you know, being president does not, quote, confer a lifelong get out of jail free pass. And so, you know, Trump is going to appeal this to the Supreme Court. We don't know how the court will rule on that one. But, you know, all of what the real, you know, impact here is it just going to continue to potentially delay his trial in the 2020 election charge case at the federal level. The judge already, you know, canceled the initial March 4th trial date because of these legal proceedings. And so we don't know when the Supreme Court will rule. We don't know when the actual trial will occur. It could be before the election. If it's after, we know Trump is trying to delay it as long as he can so that if he wins, you know, he could pardon himself or order the, you know, the DOJ under his control to drop the case. So that's where we're at right now with that.
And it's that same former president who was able to single-handedly torpedo a bipartisan effort to increase border security and reform asylum and immigration at the southern border as of 6 p.m. Washington, D.C. time on Thursday. Where did we stand in terms of Congress? Have they basically thrown up their hands at this point, or are people still trying to salvage something?
Well, we saw the Senate, you know, after a week of just total chaos on the Republican side, we did see the Senate pass, you know, an aid bill for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. And it passed in bipartisan fashion, 67 to 32, you know, still faces long odds in the House where there's a lot more anti-Ukraine, anti-funding for Ukraine Republicans and where Trump has much more of a stranglehold. So it's unclear if it'll pass the House. If it does, it'll be deeply absurd because this was the original deal Democrats wanted, and it was Republicans who wanted to tie it to the border and then reneged when Trump said not to. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It is just extremely chaotic and very much, you know, shows why this current iteration of the Republican Party just cannot be trusted to govern at all.
As you work on stories for Courier Newsroom for all of our sister outlets around the country. I want to ask you about a few stories there that our listeners might find interesting. So while we're talking about immigration, let's start in Iowa, where one of the headlines is about pushback on anti-immigration bills, you know, that are being considered by lawmakers there. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so Iowa, which, you know, is controlled by a Republican trifecta, has passed a whole host of laws over the last couple of years. And, you know, this year they are trying to pass more anti-immigration bills. And so, you know, it's very much shows you what the Republican Party is about. You know, this legislation, it's a bunch of different bills they're introducing. One would require all Iowa employers to enroll in E-Verify, which is a federal program that tracks, you know, whether a worker is undocumented or not. And any business that does employ these workers would be punished. There's another bill that would allow Iowa judges and law enforcement to enforce federal immigration laws, including the ability to deport someone. That one feels very unconstitutional. There's another bill that would prevent undocumented people from getting public assistance and basically make it a felony to ride in a car with someone who's undocumented. So let's say you are, you know, a pastor driving an undocumented person to get, you know, food aid or a hospital or something, you could be charged and arrested.
Wow.
And then, you know, so there's just, they're just really ugly bills. And, you know, Iowa is not a state with a growing, robust population. A lot of people who grow up in Iowa leave, similar to Wisconsin, I know, to some extent. But, you know, Iowa is developing a reputation right now for being really far right. And they do have a decent sized immigrant population. And, you know, right now it's mostly immigrants who are, you know, filling open jobs in places like Iowa and other places. And to just alienate them needlessly to appease, you know, your far right base, long run is just going to hurt Iowa.
It is, but it does not seem to be stopping the far right, which is has also been targeting libraries and the freedom to read. What's happening on that front?
Yeah, so also in Iowa, Republicans there are trying to pass legislation that would effectively gut the authority of local library boards and give local city councils more power over over public libraries, including over finances and, you know, hiring and firing of library directors. And this is a pretty clear effort to, you know, override local, you know, to politicize libraries. In the way that they have been doing schools and education and books in the last couple of years. This is just the latest, you know, attack on that line of legislation. And, you know, we've seen a lot of people speak out against this legislation in Iowa, and no one has supported it. There's no one, no city or municipal lobbying agency has supported it. There's no one has testified in support of it. It's very much just a bill by Republican lawmakers for a small part of their base.
And then we'll go to one other state there where I thought there were some interesting stories, two stories out of Pennsylvania, one dealing with education funding and one dealing with Moms for Liberty, this group that appeared to be on the rise until people looked past the name and saw just how very right wing it was. What kinds of things are happening there?
Yeah. So, you know, Moms for Liberty is a right wing education group that has really been at the forefront of the, you know, quote unquote, parents' rights movement, better known as pushing for book bans and anti-LGBTQ policies. In at least one county in Pennsylvania, Lehigh County, the Moms for Liberty chapter has gone from, you know, about 200 people at its peak to now being dissolved. You know, it declined over the course of the last couple of years, especially after the 2023 elections when the group suffered losses sort of across the country. And, you know, the person who originally founded the local chapter just said, you know, it just wasn't worth it anymore. And there was no real willingness to do the work that they felt was required to propel their movement. So that chapter in Lehigh County has been dissolved. And then on the education front, you know, Pennsylvania's Governor Josh Shapiro, who's a Democrat, proposed a historic funding increase for public schools. And that includes money to make environmental repairs in schools. It includes money to make permanent universal free breakfast. And so it would be a huge, more than $1 billion increase in education funding.
It's nice to see again where there's places where, in this case, Democratic governors want to make investments in public education, something that, again, is hard to believe in this day and age has become a partisan issue, but so it is. And so we find ourselves in this day and age. But Kia Vakil, as always, we appreciate you catching us up to speed on the news headlines. Now it's time for sports with Kia Vakil. It's Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah.
Who you got?
I got the Chiefs.
Why? And if you tell me it's just because of Taylor Swift, I'm
hanging up. No, it's because of Patrick Mahomes. I just think in one game, I just think he can take over a game in a way that Brock Purdy can't. And we've seen the Chiefs. They are not the same team they were last year or any other Super Bowl runs, but he is just unbelievable. And I think in when it comes down to it, I think he's just going to be too good.
And now, sorry, I should have minded my manners. I didn't ask about the weather. You had terrible rains out there. You're in Los Angeles. What was it like?
I am in Los Angeles. It was very rainy for about more than, almost three straight days. And it just cleared up yesterday, really this morning, actually, on Thursday morning. And so, it was just a constant flow of rain. Where I was not terrible, but, areas 2 to 3 miles from me got over a foot of rain in 3 or 4 days, which is just crazy. And so we saw mudslides. The right side of my car is drenched in dirt right now because I was near a sewer drain and it just pushed a bunch of dirt against my car. But overall, not catastrophic for me. A lot of people did have damage to their houses, unfortunately, which is tragic.
Well, we're glad you're well. And again, appreciate you, as always, taking some time to help us wrap up the week and look through what was making the news. Kia Vakil, find his stuff over at upnorthnewswi.com, couriernewsroom.com. Look for his newsletter there as well. Thanks, Kia. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat. Thanks.
And of course, we're going to have Brittany Merlot coming up in just a bit, who you'll recall a few days back when all that flooding rain was happening in LA, said we are going to have an impact here a couple of days later. And we had our first tornado in February, like ever. We'll talk more to Brittany about that in a few minutes. But first, today's history lesson is coming up next. You're up north.
Stayed in bed all morning just to pass the time. There's something.
Of course, this is the great Carole King, who is 82 years old today. Born Carole Joan Klein in Manhattan. She and her then husband and songwriting partner, Jerry Goffin, would pen just a truckload of international pop hits in the early to mid 60s. Number ones like Will You Love Me Tomorrow? Take Good Care of My Baby, The Locomotion, Go Away, Little Girl. After they divorced, her solo work brought another round of classics from You've Got a Friend to all the hits on the landmark album Tapestry that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Happy birthday again to Carole King. On this day in 1964, it was a Sunday, and that meant America was at home watching The Ed Sullivan Show. And that meant they were watching television history as the Beatles made their American TV debut with a record 73 million viewers. And that's it. That's all we get for that.
We don't want to get sued.
There you go. We mentioned Travis Tritt's birthday today. He is 61 years old today. Let's see. We have one more tune we can play from him, right?
Got lots of tunes. He's got tons of tunes. Okay. Here we go.
All right.
And it's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close my eyes. There's some hard times in the neighborhood.
Yeah, I could see where we would play that song a little more often. Yes, it is a great day to be alive. Hey, this is the anniversary of the National Weather Service, then known as the U.S. Weather Bureau, created as President Ulysses Grant signed a congressional joint resolution that would create what is now the National Weather Service. Satchel Paige became the first Negro League player to be voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame on this day in 1971. And on this day in 1974, everybody knows Barry White. Everybody knows that very low. Yeah. There it is. But he also was a composer and had a big instrumental hit on this day in 1974, hitting number one with his Love Unlimited Orchestra performing Love's Theme.
I had no idea this was him.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Because it also makes me think, Madison, here with me.
Oh, I never thought about that. Wow. We're learning stuff from each other here on the history lesson. On this day in... You do like this, don't you? He had a couple of other lesser-known hits, but this was the big one. The Love Unlimited Orchestra. And I just love that name. The Love Unlimited Orchestra. Yeah, baby. On this day in 1950, Wisconsin Senator Joseph McCarthy delivered a speech in which he claimed to have a list of members of the Communist Party working in the U.S. State Department. And on this day in 2021, the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump began in the wake of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Conviction would have meant Trump could no longer run for office, but there were 50 Republicans in the Senate at the time, and 43 of them voted for acquittal. And that's why we're still in the position that we're in. Yes, sir. All right, we already talked about it being National Pizza Day. It is apparently also National Chocolate Day. It's also, I don't know why. I don't make the rules. I just look at the
it just
calendar
seems like
national. It's incongruous. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's you think it'd be all over the news. National Chocolate Day.
I think there's all these other I think there's like multiple, like, yeah. You know, they find like Chocolate Candy Day or Chocolate Something Day. So, yeah, this one just says Chocolate Day. Well, yesterday, for example, yesterday was Go Fly a Kite Day. I didn't even mention it, you know, because it's like, it's February. Yeah. And I was listening to Pete Schwabe last night going, why is it Fly a Kite Day? Well, it was apparently the anniversary of Ben Franklin's birthday, the anniversary of the day that Ben Franklin flew the kite, you know, and kind of confirmed this theory of electricity. Fine, make it Electricity Day.
Yeah.
But a day in February is not going to be Go Fly a Kite Day.
Not here in Wisconsin, at least.
No, especially yesterday. That thunderstorm will just blow it right away. Yeah. It's also Bagel and Lox Day. I love a bagel and lox. Just such a great combination.
Benji's Deli, Shorewood. Oh,
One of the things I like about being in Madison is Gotham Bagels over just off Capitol Square. Love going there for breakfast. Really nice. It is International Winter Bike to Work Day, which is really easy this year. So far, Greg's giving it a big old thumbs down. The winter biking. Do you have one of those fat tire bikes that you've ever tried it with?
I've been told that fat tire biking in the winter is not good. Like, it actually increases your chance of accidents.
Oh, any biking in the winter. Why would I? Again, I've seen people do it. And look, I'm all about, you know, fuel efficiency and conservation and exercise, but only to a point. Like, you know, it's like flying a kite during a thunderstorm. There's just some things you shouldn't do. There might be a benefit to it, but I wouldn't recommend it. This is National Cut the Cord Day, but this is one of those where...
All right, well, goodbye.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, it was a holiday, not a holiday, but it was a thing created by Sling TV, trying to get you to cut the cord on cable and, you know, use their service instead. And now we have so many streaming services. Did you know, what is the most recent streaming service that you started using?
Oh, I would say the most recent one, Peacock.
Or how many of them do you
have?
How
many we have? Way too many. Like, name a common one.
Is Paramount Plus, is that a separate streaming thing?
We got it.
I think you got, do you have that one too? Yep. You got the Hulu?
Got it.
Peacock.
Yeah, got it.
Oh my goodness, you have them all, because you got Netflix, you got Apple TV.
Yep.
Wow. So that's,
we have
also
Acorn, we have BritBox. Prime. It's Prime. Oh, of course we have Prime because we mm-hmm. Prime. It's
okay. Yeah. I mean, you're overpaid, Greg, is what it is. If you can afford all these streaming services. And finally, it's National Read in the Bathtub Day, so that when you do finally cut the cord from all of these streaming services, just go read a book in the bathtub.
Heck yeah.
Or, you know, read it on your device, but don't, please don't let it be plugged in at the time. You're right. Read the book. Read the book in the bathtub. All right, we're shaking up the schedule just a little bit coming up next year, because we've got Mike Clemens live from Las Vegas to talk about the Super Bowl. So he'll be coming up at 7:30. So our regular 7:30 friend, Mark Jacob, will join us next, right after Brittany Merlot's forecast.